Good Friday morning. Welcome back to In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. Brady Bowman with you. Again, thanks to C. Clyde Jones and Beverly Olson for coming in for that first segment and telling us about some goodwill in the community. It's always good to hear about goodwill because you look at the national headlines sometimes and you're not seeing that, especially in the last few weeks. Here with the RCPD Director Brad Schoen now. And Brad, I just think let's just go ahead and get into it and talk about how the Parkland school shooting is really had ripple effects at every level across the country, at the local level. I guess first off, with your experience, over three decades of experience in law enforcement and dealing with these matters and being involved in school safety and those sort of issues, how did we get to here? How did we get to this point?
Well, I think it points up one of the things that I've been talking out for a long time, the mental health issue. I mean, that clearly plays a role. When you look back over the history of school shootings, that's the case on a lot of occasions. So I think anything we can do there to kind of, you know, help get a handle on that's good. I think anybody who's listened to this show for a while knows my position on mental health care and, you know, the state transferring responsibility to the locals and then basically abandon them financially. So that's something I think we could seriously do some work on. But, you know, a lot of it really amounts to preparation. The responses to these things have evolved a little bit over time, and I think to the better. You know, cops generally are kind of, I don't want to say tradition-bound, that's too strong, but you know what? We tend to develop tactics that emphasize, you know, safety and doing things properly and taking an approach that permits us to, you know, achieve the goal we're after. And the initial phases, I think, of the police response to the school shooting scenarios tended to do that. You know, they'd require officers to show up, gather into groups of, you know, two or three before they'd enter and leave somebody outside to coordinate activities and blah, blah, blah. And what we learned over time was that really wasn't that wasn't the way to go, because while we're getting organized outside, guess what's going on inside? So the response on a national level, and we've done this here locally for a number of years, we've trained a different response that says when you get there, go. Because while you're standing around waiting outside, there's shots being fired inside, people are dying. I kind of liken it to sort of like a medical triage. Anybody's ever, you know, watched movies about, you know, war and the impact it has on people and the injuries and, you know, and the medical side of that. You know, even think back to the old show MASH. I mean, there are times when you're faced with more injuries than you can deal with, and you have to look at them and say, okay, there's a whole lot of people here. I can spend a lot of time saving this guy, but if I work on him too long, three others die, or I can save these three in the time it would take me to save that one. That's a horrible situation to be faced with, but as a medical professional in that situation, you do the greater good. And so for law enforcement, if you translate that over to the school shooting and our response, we had to say, look, it may not be the most effective. It may put us at greater hazard, but we've got a responsibility to get in there and do what we can to stop this right now, you know, because once we move, we're at least taking some action and hope to stop the shooting situation sooner. So that really is where we've been for a number of years. But I think what I'd like the local public to know is that kind of unique, certainly unique for our area, maybe unique in the state. We entered into sort of a, I don't know what you call it, an organizational philosophy, and then subsequent to that, a training concept with EMS and Manhattan Fire and us and the school district. And we've actually been on site on several occasions now, and we're going to do another one this summer, where we have rehearsed these sorts of things jointly. You know, how do we enter the facility? Who do we enter with? What's everybody's job when you get in the facility? Who takes care of the injured? Who takes care of the shooter? Who takes care of evacuating the building? Where do you evacuate them to? And I've gone up and watched a couple of these, and it was kind of interesting when I went to look at the response of some of the school district employees who were there. There were teachers there. There were some of the administrators there, you know, that sort of thing. And this was a significant emotional event for some of them watching this because, you know, they were envisioning their students and all this sort of stuff. But they have now an inkling into what it is that we're going to be doing in the ways of response. And we've managed to coordinate that with Manhattan Fire, for example. Their job is to get the injured people as first responders out to the EMS people. Their job is to stay outside and deal with them. Our job is to go in with the fire people and secure them, or secure the facility, and then give them the ability to do the evacuations. So these are big exercises, and it's complicated to pull it off. We've been asked to make a couple of presentations on what it is we're doing in the region here, and we're happy to do that and sort of spread what information we've got and what we've been able to learn.
As a matter of fact, I think one of our followers on some of our social media sites on our K-Man's Facebook page mentioned being a part of one of those exercises.
Oh, yeah?
And talked about how changing that was. We do have a phone call. Caller, you're on In Focus. Go ahead.
Good morning. I have a comment to make, and I know that guns are legal in certain situations. I grew up with, my dad had a gun for killing coyotes, and my family are deer hunters and pheasant hunters. But why can any of us, other than military, in the military, purchase these, I guess they call them assault rifles, that repeatedly shoot? I mean, they can kill hundreds of people within, I mean, a matter of seconds. So why does the public, I know this mental illness and all that is bad too, why can the public buy one of those guns?
Right. Well, I'm going to give you some definitions here. Assault rifle is really kind of a clunky term, because when you say assault rifle, people picture things like AR-15s, AK-47s, that sort of stuff. And they typically have larger magazines and a semi-automatic action. What that means is every time you pull the trigger, the gun will discharge one round. This, as opposed to a fully automatic or a machine gun, where you pull the trigger and hold it and it just keeps spraying rounds for as long as you hold the trigger down until it runs out. As a matter of construction, when people say assault rifles, one of the things that is important to understand is that there are also other rifles out there used for sporting purposes, hunting purposes, that are constructed just like an assault rifle. They do the same thing. Every time you pull the trigger, a round comes out. So the assault rifle term is almost exclusively applied to those that appear to be military rifles, but in point of, I mean, just by appearance, that's what they look like. You know, they look like military rifles. AR-15 is probably the best example, originally made by Colt, I think. But functionally, they're no different than semi-automatic 223s that people hunt, shoot varmints with, or these sorts of things. So it's really easy and really happens rapidly. You get off into the weeds about when you start discussing, okay, why can people possess these sorts of things? And fundamentally, it's a Second Amendment question that probably really won't be resolved by any of us here locally. I mean, somewhere on a national level, this is going to come to a head someday, and, you know, the court may have to say yay or nay.
But it's like my grandson, I mean, he'll kill a skunk or whatever varmint there's out there, but it just produces one shot. I've never seen him shoot, pull a trigger, and it shoots multiple shots at one time.
Oh, yeah. There are guns that, like you're describing as well, you shoot one shot, and then you have to, for example, work a bolt action. I grew up hunting pheasants as well, like you just talked about, and I had a semi-automatic shotgun that you didn't have to pump. You just pull the trigger, and it would automatically fire, and the gas from the round going off would automatically cycle the mechanism and insert another round into the chamber.
But why can a person, well, like the ones that have killed at these school shootings, have a gun even that will do multiple shots by just pulling the trigger? I mean, why get from one of those?
That's a good question, and that's kind of what I was getting at. You know, I think
where they need to start, I think.
Right. What I think would really be beneficial if we had a system whereby these mental health issues prevented the purchase of guns. But typically the way that system works now is, unless you've actually been, taken into custody maybe by virtue of your inability to care for yourself or being a threat to yourself or others, and then that information gets entered into the national database, absent that, what basis do we have to say, no, you can't buy this? And so that may be where we need to spend some time looking.
And that's just police custody, right? You're not talking about seeing a mental health provider or anything like that.
Well, this is the next custody level. Yeah, what qualifies? Do we want to write the rules such that if you go see a mental health professional for support because you feel depressed once 10 years ago, that qualifies, you should never buy again? I mean, these are all societal questions that we need to debate and answer. You know, and if all I've got my opinion, the caller probably has hers, and you probably have yours, somehow collectively we have to come to some sort of an understanding about what our expectation is here.
Well, I appreciate your answer, and I guess, I mean, it's, But I know these things are going to happen in churches, in schools, and it seems it takes multiple people. I mean, that's where they're going to do it, is wherever there's a crowd. They're not
surely, yeah,
one person. But thank you for your answers, and I know we need to keep working on this always.
Yeah, thank you for your call.
Thanks for that call. And we'll go take one more phone call before we go to break. Caller, you're on air.
Okay, number one, they have to fill out a gun form every time. There's 10 questions on there. If you answer yes to any of those 10, you can't buy the gun. If they've been treated by a mental illness, the guy, the doctor that's treated them is already supposed to have reported them. So when they call that in to you guys and you guys check with your NSSA or your ATF, they're supposed to already have that reported. One of them is, have you ever been treated or diagnosed with a mental illness? If you answer yes to that, you cannot buy a gun.
It's like an honor system.
Yeah, basically.
Well, it's that's a federal form. If you lie on it, that's against the law.
Yeah, we know nobody ever do that.
Well, you know, that's just like, have you ever been arrested?
Yeah. The difficulty is that when we start talking about have you been arrested, it's pretty easy to tell because all arrests are reported to a national database that the cops can see. But that's not the case, and this is kind of what I was alluding to with the previous caller. That's not necessarily the case on the mental health side. Sure, they're supposed to fill the form out. I agree. The caller's right in that regard. I see those forms. I know what he's talking about. But if they don't, or even if they do, having a national database is easily searchable to figure out what the answer to that question is by the people who are at the point of sale is a bit of an issue.
Thanks for that call. We'll have more in focus. We'll take a break. More Brad Schoen here on News Radio KMAN.
KMAN Morning News is presented by Strecker Nelson West Gas.